This podcast is brought to you by The North Star, an independent media company fully supported by our members at thenorthstar.com. We are able to speak truth to power without fear or hesitation because people just like you support this work with their monthly and annual contributions. If you're already a member, thank you. If not, join us so that we can continue our liberation journalism through podcasts, articles, activism, and so much more. Again, join us now at thenorthstar.com.
This is Ray King.
And this is Sean King.
And we are
Married to the Movement.
Couple weeks ago, we had a fight, right?
Was it a couple weeks ago? It feels like it was yesterday.
Really?
Oh. It feels very recent.
Well, it was recent, but it started a couple weeks ago, and we generally don't talk about like our business out in public because
you say our business.
I mean, like our business. Like, you know, I think every family, every marriage has its issues and its struggles, and
Sure. You
know, I grew up in a time where you just didn't put your business out on the street. Kids nowadays, boy, they don't understand everything goes on Instagram,
right?
Everything goes on Instagram Live,
or like, reality. I think reality TV may have caused that.
Oh, like, for sure. But like, I grew up and was like, don't you go talking out of my house, was, you know what I'm saying, what we got. And I feel like young people nowadays, They don't operate under those same, I guess, standards.
I think, yeah, I hear that, because life is hard, period. Mm-hmm. Just in general, life is hard. Life and death, bills, marriage, relationships, health, all those things are hard. Then adding the public pressure of the world knowing all of your business.
Right.
Only makes it that much harder.
Right. I mean, to me, it's the same reason that, you know, people advise us when we were young and first got married, that you don't even tell your family so much about the struggles within your marriage, because I can communicate so much. First of all, I'm going to tell my mom why I'm mad at you, right? Like, I'm going to tell her what you did to upset me. And she may give me advice one way or the other, or a sibling might, but they don't fully understand all the intricacies that are involved in the different decisions that we make. And so it's kind of like when a girlfriend tells you about her man that cheated and then she takes him back, you're like, what the hell? Like, what are you doing? But at the end of the day, you have to respect it's their decision. So I don't know, I'm rambling, but I'm saying all this to say that it can get dangerous to put your business out there and then everybody has an opinion about it and they don't fully understand everything that goes into making the decisions.
I guess the other side of that story, of that issue, is that because sometimes most people only put their good news on Instagram.
Yeah.
It can give you the feeling sometimes that everyday people and couples, they're not struggling.
Right. Like, I sent you a post from someone I follow, Jen Hatmaker. You know Jen.
Yeah, she's great.
And, you know, she was crying a little bit, which, no shade to her, but I don't know how people cry on camera. Like,
well, in Jen's defense, I've never seen Jen cry in my entire life.
No, but I always felt like, you know, when I was a teacher, we would tell kids, like, if they were just losing it, throwing a fit, like, look at yourself in the mirror. Because once you look at yourself, like, it's hard to keep that up.
No, I think it was Jen posted just a beautiful, transparent video about just how hard of a 48 hours her family had just gone through.
And it was really moving, actually, because I could completely identify with where she was and the emotion behind not getting along with the people in your house, whether it's your husband, your children. For her, it sounded like both. For me, it was both a couple of weeks ago. So
you had done me and the kids wrong.
Okay.
And we had a revolt.
Yeah, of course, that is definitely how you frame it.
That's not how I see it at all.
Okay, great. No, but when she posted it, one, I felt really heartened by it. We had gotten past our initial struggle. And so, you know, Well, I was able to interact with it, but I ended up feeling really honored that she would allow people into that space, into that level of transparency.
She wasn't being voyeuristic or wasn't encouraging us to be voyeuristic. And no, oversharing.
We don't know what they were fighting about or what was said or what had fallen out, what the fallout was. But we understood that, you know, she had said things that she regretted, things were said to her that people probably regretted, tempers were lost, and nobody showed up as their best self.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, if I feel this encouraged by, you know, her sharing so in such a transparent way, who else might be helped about us sharing?
Who may not connect to Jen, but who relate to us in some kind of way.
Right. Because people say things to us all the time, like, oh, your couple's goals, and if y'all can't make it, nobody can. And I was like,
I just learned a couple days ago that you had unfollowed me on Instagram. We had kind of gotten over our thing, and I asked you if you had seen a post, and you was like, well, I wasn't seeing it because I'd unfollowed you on Instagram. I said, what?
I still haven't followed you back.
What? Why not?
I don't.
You're still not feeling me.
No,
huh?
No, that's not it.
What?
You know that's not true. but. No, you post stressful stuff.
I do. Part of this is not all that we're here to talk about, but part of my role in life is to bear witness to injustice that people experience, even during a pandemic, that racism doesn't end.
Yeah.
Police brutality, unfortunately, does not end. And what happens is when horrible stuff happens, often the people it happens to ask, can somebody please get this to Sean King?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. Like, what's so interesting is I posted something. I have to remember what post it was.
What the Tiger King?
No, not the Tiger King.
You said
King,
you was going
right?
to kill me like Carol Baskin?
I did not say that.
Please stop saying
I said I was going to kill you. Oh my gosh. I totally didn't say that.
You said something like that.
I saw a meme posted by another frustrated wife on my Facebook page, and I was like, And I just, you know, I posted it as well. It was not a threat.
It was something about was Carol funny. Feeding her husband to the tigers.
Listen.
And then you said in your caption, I remember, this is a quote, you said, we might not make it, y'all.
I didn't say Sean King about to come up missing, y'all. I didn't say that. I just meant, listen, our marriage might not make it through this coronavirus. That's what I was saying.
Well,
somebody said something.
You could have said that without a reference to Carol Baskin.
No, it was way funnier.
Fed her husband to a tiger.
I definitely think she did too. And you know what? Listen, get your life, sis. I was so mad at you. This is what people don't know. Like, it was, you know, kind of tongue in cheek and it was silly, but I was actually really upset with you.
That you didn't post that on our worst days. I think it was like a day or two after the worst day. It was still bad.
I don't know. I don't think we were talking. Like, I literally don't think we were talking when I posted that. Mm. But I said that to say that even in the midst of that, somebody commented about how they were tired of you and your criticisms of Cuomo. And, you know, I was like, okay, I have a couple options here because they had said they unfollowed you, yada, 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 but they were still following me. And I was like, okay, I can, one, just delete the comment. You know, I could ignore the comment or I could respond. Because at the end of the day, you're still my husband, right? Like, you're still my person. I might not be speaking to you. I may have unfollowed you myself. I may have felt hurt by what went down. But at the end of the day, like, you're still my guy. And the way I was brought up is, you know, you don't let nobody come for your person, even if you're mad at them. And so I decided to, and plus, I honestly thought it was a teachable moment because I unfollowed you because I was mad at you, but also you just post really stressful stuff.
I mean, just as a quick aside, on an average day, at least a few hundred people unfollow me per day. Yeah. Sometimes it's a few thousand. Sometimes it's several thousand people who follow me and unfollow me, rather, on a given day. And you know, people have strong feelings about me.
Right. But I wanted her to know. So the option I chose was to respond. And I told her that I understood where she was coming from, because sometimes I get frustrated by certain views that you have. Like, you and I think people will be really surprised to know we don't agree on a lot of stuff, especially politically.
I'm a liberal. You're a conservative.
I'm not a conservative.
I'm a Democrat. You're
don't say it. I have never voted for anybody but a Democrat. but I am not an ultra liberal, which I think you are. But anyways, can I get to my point? What I'm trying to say is, I told her that while I understood what she was saying, that your call was a very specific call. And one of the things that I appreciate about you is that no matter what is going on, no matter how much hate, no matter how much shade, no matter how much BS you're dealing with, you are laser focused on what your call is. And when people send you things about their loved ones in prison, in jail right now, literally at risk of coronavirus for, you know, failure to afford bail or awaiting trial or non-violent offenses, like, somebody has to speak up for them, right? And somebody has to hold politicians' feet to the fire. And I told her, like, you're an activist. And the job of an activist is to push the envelope, to push us beyond where we're comfortable.
To speak truth. That's what speaking truth to power. When we say to power, Cuomo is the power.
Right. And so while we may be like, oh, you know what? All things considered, he's doing pretty well with his handling of the coronavirus. That does not mean that there aren't areas in which he isn't doing so well, in which he isn't stepping up,
right,
and where he needs to be held accountable, and where a person like me might be like, oh, OK, I'm going to give him some leeway as an activist. You don't give that same leeway. Like, you have a responsibility, I think, to continue pushing, even when it's unpopular, even when it makes people uncomfortable. That is how change happens. That's how we get things like a $15 minimum wage. That's how we get things like raise the age. You know what I'm saying? And so I was mad at you. I was very mad at you. But still, I wasn't going to let that particular comment
It's one thing for any of us to be upset with somebody we love, and it's another thing for us to then see a stranger upset with somebody we love. And it's like, hold on. Because when you're upset with somebody you love, it's because of the terms of your relationship. And it's like, listen, you don't share those same terms. A stranger doesn't share those same terms.
Right.
So it's the same thing. I could be upset with a child, but if I'm upset with that child and I see somebody, a stranger in public, mistreat my child,
it doesn't matter.
Oh,
yeah, it's not going down like that. Yeah, it's like, absolutely.
Yeah, me being upset with my child doesn't give anybody else permission to mistreat my child. And it's the same thing in marriage. It's like, hey, we might be having a hard time, but that's on our terms.
Now, somebody did comment on a different post and say that I was so much cooler than you.
Oh, shit. So much cooler. Let me.
I left that one up for a couple of hours. No, I eventually blocked that person and deleted it. But I mean, I did leave it up for a couple of hours.
I don't even think I'm cool.
Like, oh, you're cool, baby.
No, I don't.
You're cool.
No, I don't even have any. I'm not aiming to be cool.
No,
you know?
You are definitely not aiming to be cool.
No, I mean, I'm just saying it's not a pursuit. If I wanted to be cool, I'd be cool.
Okay, you know what would you do? Would you do a TikTok challenge?
No, not hell no. Don't get me started about that, all these challenges and stuff, dance challenges and things. That'd be the least cool damn thing I could do.
I know you think so, but I actually think it would be really cool.
Oh, well.
If there's one thing this pandemic has taught us, is that life is too short to live it unhappily. For years, I made excuses for why I wouldn't go to therapy. I didn't really need it, or it cost too much, or I just didn't have the time.
And I felt the same way, really. But starting therapy as a family has genuinely been helpful, especially during quarantine when we're all stuck really close together.
Any hesitations you have about starting therapy, BetterHelp can address. BetterHelp is an online service that will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
Listen, they are committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online.
To get started, visit BetterHelp.com/MTM. That's Better H-E-L-P. And join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And right now, listeners of Married to the Movement get 10% off of your first month at BetterHelp.com/MTM. Check it out.
Married to the Movement. Anyway, so we're supposed to be talking about the anatomy of a fight. And so many people ask us, how do we get past a difficult moment? How do we get past, you know, different issues that lots of couples face? And we did, we went through a round of counseling, like this counseling.
The last round, you mean?
Yeah. Like a couple of years ago. Was it early last year?
Well, we were living in New York. I know that much.
But it was very different than what we had done before. So we had done like traditional therapist, you know, led counseling where we went in and met with someone. This time we did something online, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it was actually really helpful. But what I realized is in this last fight we had, we didn't do anything, any of the stuff we were supposed to do.
You have to, yeah, those things have to be fresh in your mind. And
something you have to be practicing like over and over again. True. And we didn't do any of those things.
I need to go back and even look at some of the lessons.
Well, I remember some of it. It was like it basically taught that when you feel yourself in a heated moment. So I'll say two things. One, I'm also reading a book about emotional intelligence.
Oh, I saw it.
And this is what they explained, that emotions are felt all throughout your body, right? And it hits you hard and it makes its way up to your brain eventually. Like that's his goal, to get to your brain. Well, basically there are these two parts of your brain that are at play. The first part that these emotions have to pass through are your, basically, your reactive parts, right? Like your emotional feeling reactive parts. And then the second part that it gets to, which is right here in the front part of your brain, that's the reasoning part. But that's the second place it gets to. The first place it gets to here at the base of your spine, that's the reactive part. And so we're actually pre-wired to react before we're wired to reason. Now, the difficult part, what you have to do is you have to get the reasoning part of your brain and the reacting part of your brain to be working together more so that when you experience an intense emotion, because you've been practicing it, you are getting much closer to the reasoning and the reacting being closer together when they're actually conditioned to be far apart. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When I read that, I was like, what I found when we had that argument, and the argument that we had was really probably something that most married couples raising children find themselves having, is a major difference in our parenting styles, right? And
let me even take a step back to say, because depending on when people hear this, when we're recording it, it is during the height of the coronavirus pandemic. We have now been in a house together without hardly leaving for a month. And we are together, seven of us.
Yes.
Which is more than almost any family I know. Me, you, and all five of our kids, who range from elementary school, middle school, high school, and college, and have all of their own unique personalities, quirks, problems, habits. We are all in a home together. And the typical releases that we would normally have of the kids going to school from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., of everybody, and that's not just a release for me and you, that's a release for them,
mm-hmm.
that all of a sudden, all the things that we used to have that gave us a chance to be away from each other,
mm-hmm.
to actually look forward to seeing one another.
Absence definitely makes the heart grow fonder.
Well, there's no absence in the coronavirus. And what happens is it forces you, I mean, there are little nooks and crannies you can go away to in this house.
Barely.
But, you know, we're not going out to eat.
Yeah.
You know, every restaurant in the state is closed.
Yeah.
And
so we're all working harder than we would normally work,
yeah.
to keep things going, cooking 3 meals a day.
It's more food. It's more trash. It's more dishes. It's more mess.
Yeah.
It's even for now, all 5 of the kids are going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Elementary school, middle school, high school, and college are going to school online. They now have tons of work and meetings. And so it's in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this.
And all the stress and anxiety that brings. Yeah.
It's a high stress environment. And for the first few weeks, we did well without really having a major fallout in the house.
Yeah, for sure.
And
I would say that before this, you and I were doing really well. Like, I don't think that we'd had a major fight since, you know, I remember November of 2019. We had a big fight.
What happened?
We were on our way home from Atlanta. We were in the car, remember?
Uh-huh.
After Thanksgiving.
I don't quite remember
going on. I remember it, but...
Said something crazy.
Okay, whatever. But that was like the last big falling out that we'd had. And, you know, since then, we had actually just been doing really great. Mm-hmm. We're really in love. And, you know, just helping each other out, you know. Living.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you talking about? What are you saying right there? You lost me there. Are you saying something about sex?
No, God, no.
What are you saying?
Nothing. I don't know. I was just spacing out.
What just happened? What are you doing? Okay. Yes.
We had a good run of almost
6 months.
Yeah. With no fights.
Yeah. No major. We have regular. We get on each other's nerves.
Oh, you stay on my nerves, dude. That's not a question.
I just want to be clear to people who are listening. Every day there are little things that we do that get on each other's nerves, that kids do that get on our nerves, that we do that get on our kids' nerves.
Mm-hmm.
But we're saying we had gone about 6 months almost without having a major fallout. And anybody who's listening to this, who's married or used to be married or is in any kind of relationship, you know there are grades and degrees of fallout.
Right, right.
I mean, they're like, you know, a moment that may take you 5 seconds to get past because it is just a little small moment and you're over it. And then there are times where your significant other is sleeping on the couch and is thinking about just walking out in the woods. just going to live in the woods.
So it had been a long time, but, you know, so basically we had this major falling out, and I think at the root of it was a difference in our upbringing and a difference in our parenting styles and just probably other things that were really, surfaced during this time, resentments and issues with the way that we disagree that all just really came to a head this moment.
Well, you know, back to what you said about the emotional intelligence book, when you allow your emotional response to really outpace your reasoning and your measured, thoughtful, intelligent response, things can get bad quickly.
Yeah.
You know, like even just thinking about times where you and I have argued or fallen out, I can't tell you how many times I've told myself across the years that if we start arguing, I'm not going to join in.
I've told myself when Sean says that passive aggressive thing or does that passive aggressive thing, I am not going to let it rile me. When Sean is at his worst, when he goes low, I'm going to go high.
that that's not your way. As a general, I know you like Michelle Obama, and I know she is a hero to you.
Yes, but, yes, she is.
Going high when people go low has never been your thing.
No, God, no. Oh, I wish it was so
when
bad.
People go low. You drop it like it's hot. It's no. Oh, you're going low? Oh, let me show you just how low can be.
Oh my gosh. You're right.
Yeah, that is not.
It is a character flaw for sure, and I am ashamed and wish so badly that it was different. But no, you are right. I will get down in the gutter and like, okay, well, we're going to do this. Let's do this then, which is one reason why I have not had a public social media for so long, because I know that I couldn't resist.
Right.
You know,
right.
Jumping in there and getting down. Dirty. Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. I would completely debase myself.
And so I brought that up to say, many times I've told myself, if I see something about to go low between me and you, I tell myself in advance, I'm just going to flip the switch off. I'm going to walk away. And a
but
lot
that's
of times,
what our counseling says we should do. Like, that's the first step. Remember in the SOW method, SEW, the first one was to stop, like literally just stop, evaluate, and then proceed with wisdom. That's the SEW part.
Yeah.
And I think so often, if we could just do that first step, that stop, if it's stop and walk away, stop and get in the car and go for a drive, stop and go downstairs, like whatever it is, if we could just stop, so much hurt and harm would be avoided at that point, right?
Right.
But you nor I are very good at that part.
I'd be stopping on the red.
No, just really, just what? Don't. You don't. You have this way. You know, you have this very kind of way, because I see it.
Look,
in
I'm
our
stopping right now. I'm stopping right now.
Okay. Whatever.
I am practicing so at this very moment.
Yeah, because I got the camera on.
Oh, what? You said I'm performing for the camera? No. Oh, no.
I don't think you are. But no, I don't think either one of us are very good at that stop. Because I told you a couple weeks ago to stop. I said, get out of my face. And did you walk away?
When? You talking about a couple weeks ago?
Yes. No, you didn't. I said, leave me alone.
And what I do?
You just kept on talking, kept on bringing it up.
That's how you remember it?
Oh, no, that's definitely how it
that
went
is
down.
Damn sure. Now, I don't remember anything going down like that.
Okay, well, you wouldn't. No. Anyway, see what I'm saying? See at our inability to stop? So stop, evaluate, and proceed with wisdom. Mm-hmm. We did not do that. And there were several times. I mean, this fight happened one day on a Saturday. And it seemed like a couple days later we were going to be able to move past it. And then the next Saturday, another big fight happened again. And it was just, it was a mess. It was awful. It was painful. It was,
you know, without just reliving it and telling everybody's business, it was a whole house problem.
Yeah.
Just like,
of course, because we're all here together.
Yeah. And at the root of it was the kids misbehaving and us disagreeing on how to handle that.
Right. And then everything that bubbled up as a result of that, all the resentments and things that I think that I have built up about my role and versus your role.
As a wife, as a mother.
As a wife, as a mother.
As a working woman.
That's right. That. And all those pressures. And so it was just a lot. What my hope and my prayers, and this is what we talked about a little bit today as we did devotional with the kids, because it's Sunday. We were watching, you know, like a ministry, a family devotional online. And my hope is that through this really, really difficult time where we're all together and forced to deal with ourselves and deal with each other, that at the end of it, we will come out better and stronger for having been forced to confront these things that we would have ignored otherwise. We're, as one thing, like we're not very good as a family at having family meetings and sitting down and hashing it out and talking through it. Like, it's just not our way. We're move on kind of people, right? Like, we just move on with it. But that allows a lot of stuff to be buried, right? And swept up under the rug. And here we are in a pandemic, you know, stuck in the house, and really being forced to confront and deal with it. And so my hope is that we will be able to do that from a place of love and support for each other, and not in ways that will tear down our family and make things harder than they have to
be. I think there may be three or four little lessons that I tried to practice, or saw you or even the kids try to practice, that helped us get through it. First, in a pandemic, if everybody in the house has fallen out with everybody else, that's a miserable place. And it, you know, having a major fallout in the house is hard. It's doubly hard when you don't, when you're not going to be able to go out and go to the movies, when you're not going to be able to go to work the next day, because you don't have anywhere to go. So you're just mad in everybody's face, mad.
Right. And then you got to like walk around and go to the kitchen and be in the same space and not talk to each other. And it's just miserable.
And so, you know, there are several things. Eventually, at first, it's kind of like a game of chicken. And
it's like, have you seen Kev on stage? He posted one time. He was like, you know, married couples never really apologize. It's just, they just start kind of talking like,
hey, yeah, right, right.
You want a piece of this chicken? did you take the dog out?
Yeah, you know? Well, it does start in that way. And sometimes it's just the small things in life where the sting of the dispute begins to wear off, and sometimes that takes hours, and sometimes that takes days.
And well, for you, it doesn't take long because you need me. You would starve otherwise.
I was cooking. I was cooking.
Boy, by you had cooked like the two things you know how to cook, which is like hot dogs on the grill and some steak on the grill. After that, you were done. You didn't know what to do with yourself. You couldn't nothing. You didn't know where.
Even true.
It's true.
First, I make spaghetti. Y'all ate it last night. Y'all have had it several other times. All right, since
reached your max of what you knew how to
do. I've also made hamburgers, and they were delicious, and everybody loved them.
Right. Okay. So you
had a couple things on the repertoire.
Maybe three things, and then you were just like, you didn't know what to do with yourself. You have stories you wanted to tell me that you just had to keep to yourself, right?
No.
Yes, it's true.
No, I was fine. I was just fine.
Okay. Right.
No, I was happy. Yeah. But after a while, there's a game of chicken that you play where somebody eventually has to be the first to really apologize. And it doesn't, and it's not necessarily the one who was all wrong or anything like that, but somebody has to.
There's no such thing.
Right.
There's no such thing as all right or all wrong, right? Like, by the time you have that level of argument,
everybody bears responsibility.
There's enough blame to go around.
So somebody has to come to the situation hat in hand and say, listen, y'all, you know, I'm sorry.
Okay, and who was that this time?
I don't remember.
It was me.
I know it was you.
Yeah, it was me. And listen, I'm proud of that because that has not always been the case.
No,
it is almost always you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I don't have a problem offering a sincere apology. And it wasn't that I was sitting around with a problem this time. But you beat me to it. No, you beat me to it. And that's fine. You came to the family through a text.
Hey, listen, still, it happened.
Yeah, no, but sometimes you can struggle face to face, and sometimes a text can.
That works for us. It works for our family. It works for me and you, right? Like some people say, oh, don't text. Things get lost in translation, whatever. It is a much less volatile way for us to communicate because we are a family where emotions run high. You know what I'm saying? And so for us,
it's hard to have a snippy comment on text in a way that it can kind of just quickly ease out in person.
Yeah.
Or people sometimes your, not your, but somebody's facial expressions may
set you off.
Yeah. Whereas a text, you can kind of be measured. You can backspace and rethink what you're going to say.
That's
and kind
true.
Of get it just right. And so you offered an apology, and some others of us in the house replied with apologies of our own. And that wasn't the end of it, but
no.
it broke the ice, and it was the beginning of the end of it. And we began to move forward. And it doesn't mean, so say that fallout, say it caused a wound of a certain size, it doesn't mean that that whole wound is now invisible, and it there's still remnants of it here, but it's healing because people acknowledge their role, acknowledge that they made mistakes, that they said the wrong thing, and then everybody in the house has tried to be humble, I think.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, because nobody wants to return to that space, right? And so everybody's being a lot more careful. And you know what my therapist has admonished us to do is to find a space where we can sit down as a family and talk through, you know, some of the issues and things that occurred and that are actually still there, speaking about the wounds, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You can smooth it over, but if you don't actually deal with the stuff, then it's going to come up again and again. And so I think that is our next move, you know, when we feel ready and capable of doing that.
In a few minutes, the family is about to take a family walk together. And even that is a degree of progress. We've gone out and maybe run an errand, but in fact, it was going out to run an errand during the pandemic where we first really super, super fell out.
Now, that was the second edition.
Oh, right.
That was the flare up, which, you know, there was just like a lot of resentment there from the first flare up, and that we had attempted to just kind of gloss over. Mm-hmm. And
we was in the parking lot of Five Guys, burgers and fries.
Yeah, I didn't even get to eat my shake or my burger.
I still ate mine, and you hated me for it.
Yes, I did. Oh my gosh, why are men like that?
I was like, listen, I'm gonna eat this pandemic burger.
You were throwing down like there was nothing going on. I was so mad at you.
I'm just saying, Five Guys, burger, fries, and shake during a pandemic are hard to come by. And even though the whole family was falling apart, I didn't see the value of the family falling apart and me being hungry.
Oh my
gosh. So I figured if the family's gonna fall apart, I'm gonna at least get this burger.
Oh my gosh, I could have strangled you. I was so angry. This reminds me a few years ago, like I was talking to one of my best friends and we were talking about what happens when we fall out with our husbands, and she was saying how angry it made her that she and her husband have a big old fight, and at the end of the night he's getting in bed and he's able to go to sleep, and she's up for hours stewing. And I was like, what, you too? Like, that's me. Like, I'm mm-hmm. up, I'm angry, I want to talk about it until we can't talk about it anymore, and I don't care if that means we talk about it until the sun comes up. Not you though. You gonna roll over and you gonna be snoring, and I'm like, how do you have any peace when we have
it's not that I have peace, it's just I know I gotta get up in a few hours. And
well, I also have to get up in a few hours,
but
I just can't sleep.
Yeah, my brain tells me you better get this rest or you're not gonna be productive.
Well, listen, I have since, that was years ago, I've since moved past that. Like, I can also go to sleep at this point, but I cannot eat. And that you sat there and just smashed those fries and milkshake like that.
And my burger.
It's shameful. Yeah.
And then I had a bite left of my burger that I saved in the foil. And I ate it when I got home.
Okay, whatever. Whatever.
Yeah, but we have, you know, so here in a few minutes, we're going to take a family quarantine walk together. And this will really is even, it's even a measure of progress that we're able to all be in the same room. We've watched some TV together.
We've been fine. Like this last week, you know, this last week has been perfectly fine. We've spent some good time together, watched TV, played games.
The two little kids were on spring break, whatever that is. And
right.
And that helped, actually, because managing their school day is stressful for a lot of people in the house, you know.
Is it stressful for you?
Well, just a little bit.
Oh,
but it's,
boy, bye.
But it's stressful for Kendi, our daughter, for you, and for them.
Yeah.
To be on for what I think is way too long.
Well, what's about to be stressful is that now on Tuesday, spring break is going to be over. And
oh, so they don't have it tomorrow?
They don't have it tomorrow, but you know, they've been sleeping till like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And getting them back on that schedule. Lord have mercy. I mean, I am not like these crazy people out here talking about open up the country and, you know, protesting and being ridiculous. But, oh, it would be so good to be able to go back to normal, which I know we're a long way away from. But
I think I do think like I've been studying different cities in China and that have now said you are free to move about the city, and how even though they've removed the restrictions, like nobody's still going out, you know, like, you know, I don't know if it's going to stay that way forever. But I think even after, particularly in cities like ours in New York and others that have been very badly affected.
Yeah.
I think for a long time, people are going to be very slow to just get back out and about because the fear is very real. And you know, one thing that I don't remember if it was Jen Hatmaker who said it, but I've actually heard two or three people say it. Everybody's afraid right now.
Yeah.
And however afraid people tell you they are significantly more afraid than that.
That's what she said. Yeah, she was saying, you know, your kids may say one or two things that reveal to you some level of discomfort or anxiety. But if they're saying one or two, that means they're probably 40 beneath the surface.
Yeah.
Right. And that really helped me. And I really had to think about that. And, you know, I'm an early childhood development, you know, person is what I got my degree in. Right. It's what I've done for forever. And for some reason, like I can see these things in other people's children. But then bringing those same skills home to my own kids is a different thing. And so when she said that, it reminded me that there are all kinds of ways that kids show their stress and their anxiety. And it doesn't often involve saying I'm stressed or I'm anxious, you know? And so we all have to have grace for each other right now, and be hyper aware of how we're showing up and, the effect that that may be having, ways that we've shown up in the past that may have been okay because it was going to be a passing moment and you got past it and everybody went their own separate ways. Something different may be required of us during this time.
Yeah, I think the pandemic and the quarantine and the stay-at-home orders, it forces all of us to be our very best for a longer number of hours per day. You know,
right.
You know, you just have to be on and at your best for in front of your family, your children, your spouse. You have to be your best, and you just don't get a break from each other. And I really think that's just a different way of living.
Yeah. And, well, you said something, and Jen kind of echoed it in her post, but you said something that actually really really resonated with me, and that you said something like,
I do that.
Oh, dear God. Okay. You said something like, none of us is who we are on our worst day.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, that even comes just from my advocacy in the justice system, that we should never see people as just the sum total of who they were on their worst moment in life.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how we see and treat incarcerated people who often, like, in my community, we actually are often disappointed when people just advocate for those who made nonviolent mistakes.
Mm.
And because there are about 1 million people who made violent mistakes, and they are better than that violent mistake they made. and it may have cost a life or caused harm. But even they are better than that one mistake they made.
Yeah, but when you're in the middle of a difficult moment, like I was so mad at you 2 weeks ago. I was like, I'm never going to talk to him again. You
know,
I'm never going to say anything.
Those are the things we tell ourselves. I've said,
right, because I couldn't imagine, I couldn't see past the anger of that moment. I should have been able to, because we've been together.
You didn't
together
sign up for a
over...
Tinder account, did you?
Boy, bye. I wouldn't sign up for a Tinder account if we were divorced.
Listen,
if we don't make it, that's just it. Like, that's just it. I can't do this again. You've worn me out.
You know, I'm doing a eulogy for a family on Tuesday online. And a woman's mother was 75 and passed away. But she wanted me to know that her mother was super, super vibrant. And she said, her mother was uber active, and that her mother had just recently signed up on several dating websites.
Oh, wow.
Just this year.
Oh, wow.
And and we just laughed so hard about it, because she said when other people hear that your 75-year-old mother died, they're thinking like, she lived a full life. And the woman, Genesis, whose mother passed away, Genesis was telling me, she was like, literally a few months ago, my mother and I were thinking, she said her mother literally said, I probably got 20, 25 more years to go.
Wow.
And she's people in her family lived a long time. And,
So your point is I should never say never. Maybe Tinder is in my future.
No!
Is that the point?
No. I was laughing at the fact, Genesis, whose mother passed away, she and I had just a big laugh about her mother getting on the dating websites. But I have now spoken to several people who lost their mothers, fathers, uncles, brothers. And for me, it's also given me a lot of perspective of, I have several friends now who contracted the coronavirus and have recovered. But speaking to these families whose loved ones died from it has also caused me to just say, listen, the things that we do fight about are not worth carrying in this pandemic. You know,
They might be worth dealing with.
Yeah.
But you're right. The anger and the hurt and the frustration, certainly not worth carrying. We need each other.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. And in a weird way, I tell you something else that I've been thinking about during this pandemic. Me and you, but the whole family, we've tried really hard to be healthy because we don't even want to get sick at all. Like, I don't even want any sickness right now, knowing that it makes us susceptible to everything else. And the truth is that it's not even healthy to when we fall out, you do lose sleep. It is high stress, high anxiety. It raises your blood pressure. It causes you to eat on junk food and, you know, like anything you can do to cope and get through it. And even there was a time where a couple weeks ago when we were fighting, where I was even thinking like, yo, this is not healthy. And, you know, like we're trying to be healthy. This is not even a healthy way to live during the pandemic.
Yeah. So, you know, again, not sure when this will air to the general public, because it right now, this podcast has just been for our North Star members. But for anybody listening, would say this: try to follow the SOW method and try to do a better job than we did. Stop, evaluate the situation and try to see it for what it is. And then proceed with wisdom. And those steps probably don't happen back to back to back, you know.
Sometimes
quickly.
You just stop.
Sometimes you just stop. And that's where you are for the rest of that day. You are in a place of stopping. And you're evaluating is maybe happening privately. But if all you can do is stop, then just stop.
Before you dig a hole, before you say something that's hard to dig yourself out of, before you act out physically or violently, or, you know,
yeah, for sure.
Well, you do have to say that, because that, you know, a lot of people are suggesting there's a rise in domestic violence right now.
I can only imagine.
In part because people who were previously abusive, you are now in the home with that person 24/7.
That's right. No escape, nowhere to go. So yeah, that's a whole other thing though. That's definitely not what we're giving advice for.
No, but it is to say, if anybody who is listening to this, who has serious problems with your temper or anger or any of that, you know, it may not sound as easy as stop, but the best advice I can give you is that you do have to stop before any situation escalates. And I'm not saying that to any domestic violence victims. I'm speaking to anybody who struggles with anger of any kind. When we practice that soul method of stopping before we escalate a situation, then give ourselves an opportunity to earnestly evaluate it. That evaluation is also about trying to see the situation from the other person's perspective, trying to understand what all is really going on. And then that whole thing of proceed with wisdom, I love that because I don't see myself as some wise sage, but I think every person knows what proceeding with wisdom looks like and doesn't look like.
Right. You definitely know what it doesn't look like. Even if we can't quite figure out, we don't know the next step. We don't know the right thing to do. Should we let it go? Should we not? I don't feel heard. I don't feel seen. I don't feel understood. And I want to get this point across. And should I do that? Or should I just drop it? You often don't know, but we do know what not proceeding with wisdom looks like. Yeah. Right. And so as much as possible, you know, if we can avoid that, then at least you leave room for healing to happen.
Yeah.
You know,
do you have some closing thoughts? I know we're going to hit the road and get out and at least walk for an hour or so.
Just think that my only closing thought is just that I felt like it was important for us to have this conversation about marriage. One, because I do want to dispel this myth that we are couples goals, or, you know, that if we can't make it, no one can. Like, that's not a thing.
We have all the same struggles, problems. Hell, we have more problems. I'm just saying, there's so many of us.
There are so many of us. But then I do think that being a public figure as you are, being in the spotlight, like, that definitely compounds it. This is why people say stuff like, oh, you all should have a TV show, or, oh, I would never submit our family to that level of stress and scrutiny. Like, this level of sharing, this is where I draw the line.
Right. We are the editors in chief of this conversation.
Exactly. Right. 100%. And so in that way, I would say, yeah, maybe more problems because it's harder to be in the public eye. But just like we're regular everyday people with the same regular everyday people struggles. And if anything about our journey has been helpful, can be helpful to anyone, that was the whole reason I wanted to do this podcast in the first place. And so if you see yourself or your own struggle reflected in it, and anything that we've been through is able to help make your road easier, then great. That's my goal.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great thought. And I'm looking forward to taking this walk with the family.
Yep.
All right, dear.
Married to the Movement is brought to you by the North Star. We're so grateful to our members who make this and all the North Star content possible. Members of the North Star will always have access to this content first. So if you're not a member, you can head over to thenorthstar.com, click join now, and access this podcast, as well as a daily column from Sean King, show notes from The Breakdown, and other news for as little as $5 monthly. We super appreciate your support. Shout out to our senior producer, Willis, our podcasting director, Lysandra, and our creative director, Tone, for their work on today's episode. New episode live next week.